Welcome, welcome. You're listening to our podcast, Two Massage Therapists in a Microphone. My name is Mark. I'm a registered massage therapist, registered kinesiologist here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I got the biggest headache of life. Do you hate? I hate fucking headaches. I can't stand them.
They're pretty bad.
Are you asking us if we hate headaches?
I know.
Is there a person in the world that enjoys headaches?
All right, I'll take that back. How badly do you guys hate headaches? Like, I cannot stand headaches.
On a scale from 1 to 10.
Yeah, give me a scale from 1 to 10.
I'll let our guest answer first.
Like, 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
Advil every time.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's weak. I don't care. It's medicine. I don't take medicine. No.
No, fuck it. Go straight to the drugs.
Take the Advil.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Headache's not worth it.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm like that for everything, though. Like, Amanda's very kind of like, hey, let's find it. Let's find some tree bark that'll help with this thing. And I'm like, fuck that. Just give me the drugs.
When have you ever seen me use
tree bark? Oh, Jesus. You know what I mean.
I know.
Take this thing here.
I definitely lean towards natural remedies or try to think about what is causing this.
I want a white coat. I want a dude in a white coat with like bubbling beakers to have made this thing. And that's what I'm going to take.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I also had a headache this morning. And what you'll notice is I'm drinking copious amounts of water because I decided it could be because I'm dehydrated because last night I was overserved by somebody. So I didn't go straight to the
We have a partner for the Canadian Massage Conference and he overserves himself and he always says that. He's like, someone overserved me last night. I think it was me. I'm like, yeah, it was you, bud.
Yeah, I did admit this morning. I said, my headache is actually self-inflicted. And Mark said, no, that's completely my fault. I think I overserved you. I'm like, actually, yeah, you were the one pouring my drinks last night. We stayed at his mother's place. We stay there like on and off through the week with her. And every time we go there for some reason, like she must think I do nothing but drink because every time we go there, he goes, here, have a glass of wine, have a glass of wine. And yesterday was the first time she said it.
There are other daughter-in-laws who drink way more. So
yeah, but that daughter-in-law doesn't live part-time with her. This one does.
You know,
but last night was the first time she said to me, she's like, wow, you drink a lot, eh? I'm like, see, she does think that.
That doesn't mean anything.
Always when we're there, he starts pouring
me. It doesn't mean anything. She's an old lady. She just says stuff. It doesn't fucking matter. Like there's no way behind it. It's like it's an observation and it just comes out of her mouth.
Oh man. I like wouldn't accept the wine until she went to bed. Mark kept trying to give me wine. I'm like, no, she's watching me.
Unbelievable. She's not watching.
Anyway, to answer your question,
Out of 10.
I hate like 20 out of 10.
Really?
I hate headaches so much because I'm not a person who suffers with headaches. I assume somebody who suffers with headaches, they obviously hate them. But I know there are people who still go about their business when they have a headache because they're like, this is just my life.
That's how I am with every other pain. Right. I just go about
my
it.
My younger
headaches
sister
fucking
gets
floors me.
Headaches multiple times a week. My mother used to get migraines and she would still go to work because that was her normal life. I don't get headaches a lot. So the random headache I get, I'm like, I must be dying. Yeah. Like life is over. It's 20 out of 10, 100%. So today I'm not loving, but it's my own fault. So here I am, world.
Blame yourself.
Anyway, let's actually introduce our guest. We have Keely on the
couch. Yeah, sitting on our couch.
And Keely reached out because they developed some courses.
This is funny too. This made me laugh. You reach out.
What?
Oh, it did. It made us both laugh.
Because you reached out to us here for the podcast, or did we reach out to you? I don't remember.
I reached out to you.
And then you reached out on Con Ed Institute, but then you realized we're the same people.
I had no idea.
That kind of made me chuckle a little bit. I'm like, wait a second. I thought we just had a conversation about
it. You guys don't sign your Con Ed Institute. So no. I was like, well, I got to get in with Con Ed. This would be really good.
That was
and then
that
you guys, we'll just talk about it on Monday. Okay, sounds good.
That was somewhat intentional, though. Like, we are involved in multiple businesses.
Yeah.
And we try to make sure that the branding is kept very separately. So Con Ed Institute is not the same as Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone is not the same as Massage Therapy Media.
That way when you judge us on here, you won't judge the education stuff.
Anyway.
Well, first name. You could use a first
You know,
name.
I don't even tell people about, like, when they come take a course here at Con Ed Institute, as far as everyone knows, like, I'm just the instructor for the day. And I just kind of leave it at that. Unless someone's like, what's your role here? And I'm like, I teach. And they're like, yeah, but do you do anything else? Then I'm like, yeah, we kind of run the place. But other than that, I don't say anything.
I've told this story on the podcast before, but I don't know if Keely would have heard it. For at least a year that when Mark and I like really like quit our day jobs and started doing Con Ed full time. I was at dinner at my mother's house.
Less at the other day job.
Right? I was at dinner at my mother's house and she was like, so like, how does this work? Like when you guys teach all these classes, like I assume a certain percentage of what you guys make from teaching has to go to the Institute. And I was like, what are you talking about? What Institute?
Oh my God.
She's like, the Con Ed Institute. And I'm like, the business we own?
Oh, I love it. Fool everybody.
Yeah, it. The idea.
Keep it on the DL.
My own mother didn't know. Anyway.
Know. Seeing it here probably.
Keely didn't know,
it
and it's not their fault because we do a good job with our branding.
No, you
but
do.
But the That's reason good. That Keely reached out is because they've developed courses for 2S LGBTQIA plus community. Well, really for therapists
did you read
working.
That?
I did read that. So, give me a break.
I'm just teasing. You have to. You have to. I would have to have read it.
It's a lot of letters, but the whole idea is to be inclusive because one is not the same as the other, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to make sure we're including everybody.
Absolutely.
Lots of letters. It's okay. But you have developed courses. Mm-hmm. You have been teaching them. And they felt that it would be something beneficial for other therapists, especially therapists working with people in this community, which is really all of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To,
you never know.
You have no idea. Yeah. I have no idea who's going to show up on my table. Yeah. So, they want to talk a little bit about why the need for the courses and what they're doing. And also, part of their message was to say, and I'm also non-binary. So mm-hmm. this could be, you know, also an interesting topic. And
cool.
I don't know if you know this. I know you are a listener, but I don't know if we've ever brought it up. We had somebody reach out who had come out as non-binary and had been living that way for maybe about a year and wanted to be on an episode to talk about their experience.
Hmm.
And after we recorded it, and it was so good. They were so vulnerable, opened up.
Yeah.
Like it was such a really eye-opening episode.
Yeah.
I mean, it was only one person's experience. Like, it's not like we were asking this person to be like, you know, the spokesperson for all non-binary people, but I felt it was so educational and so good.
Yeah.
And after we recorded it, they sent me an email and said, I'm feeling like way too exposed right now. Can you delete the whole recording? And we never released it.
So it's a treasure you guys have in your hearts.
Yeah. And it was so good, right?
It was.
You remember
it was really
that
good.
Was like, it was such a good conversation. I was so happy with it. And then, I mean, what am I going to do? They were like, And when I responded back saying like, could you listen to it? Like, it is actually really good to see if maybe they would have a change of heart. I got completely ghosted. I was like, okay, I know how you feel. I'm not going to push this any further. So we just
emotional vulnerability hangover.
Yeah.
I've never heard that term.
Really? I've never heard that term either, but that describes it perfectly.
Are y'all in therapy?
Clearly not, but should we be? Probably.
No, I think my mom came up with it, but she told me about it. She was like, when you're so emotionally vulnerable and you just overdo it, and then that exhaustion that you feel, and partly it's a good exhaustion because you've expressed yourself, but just that exhaustion of, oh my God, I just let out all my deepest secrets. I dug into the deep grave that I've been trying to bury and hide. And you just feel like you've had a hangover.
Mm. I get that. We had one other person do that. Another person, she came on to talk about, I don't even remember now. I don't remember, but the conversation was like, I thought it was really good. It flowed really well. She was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mark put up a little clip of like this episode coming soon, and she saw it and I guess instantly regretted everything. And she was like, no, like it caused her to have an anxiety attack. Like we had to pull everything down because it just, anyway, but Keely wants to be here and tell us all their stories. And we're gonna listen with open minds and open arms and open ears, but we're gonna start with an introduction. So for anybody who doesn't know you, who are you? How long have you been a registered massage therapist?
Yeah.
If this was not your first career, what you were doing before, and then we're gonna look at your whole journey through this profession.
Yeah. So I'm Keely. I use they, them pronouns if that wasn't clear or is confusing. I went to massage school when I was 18, so I had no career before this. I mean, I guess you could say my hockey refereeing career is a career.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing that for 12 years.
Nice.
I went into school at 18.
Did you go to a community college or like a private college?
The CCMH.
The CCMH. What makes you want to go from high school to massage school?
Well, not just high school, but homeschool.
Whoa.
I was homeschooled the entire time.
Like from
like
beginning
JK
of...
to grade 12.
Hey, can we pause and talk about that for a minute?
Yeah.
Homeschooling is very, very intriguing to me. One, because like him and I actually talked about homeschooling our children.
Yeah.
But once I realized, oh, wait, that means I'm the teacher. It's like, oh, maybe not. That is a huge responsibility. And I was like, I'm cool with like being the parent that still teaches, like being really involved in their education, but like actually sending them to school and me working. But it was very intriguing to us as a child that was homeschooled. Tell me pros and cons. Give me some insight from the child's perspective.
Okay, we'll start with the pros because we'll start off on a happy note.
That, by the way, means there's some cons.
There's some cons, yeah. So the pros are that, like, so I have a learning disability and it's oh my God, work. This is part of the disability is working memory learning disability. Hmm. So, it's funny that I don't struggle with the 2SLGBTQIA+ acronym.
Like I do?
I'm not trying to point you out, but it's funny that I can remember that order of letters, but I've just had so much practice from LGBTQ, right. And then you add an I, and then you add an A, and then you add the 2S in front, and like I've just kept up with it. But my disability is that I can't keep track of random things. So I don't know phone numbers. Mm. I mean, luckily I know my own, but... what else? Random lists I have to organize into themes and categories. So when I write my grocery list, I write as you enter the grocery store, and then as you go through the grocery store,
That is how I write my grocery list, by the way.
By the aisle.
Like,
so
exactly.
Because you're traveling through the aisles.
Yes, because I know the aisles and the order. So that's exactly how I write my grocery list.
So that helps to remember things.
And what happens if you don't do that? Is it chaos?
Well, first of all, I have to write a list or else I'm not going to remember it at all. If it's out of order, I just get supremely frustrated that I haven't written it in the easiest way possible for me to pick it out. It's just more efficient that way. But so being homeschooled, my mom thought I was a genius. She was like, we're going to take you to get a learning assessment so that if you ever go to university or college, because we just had coverage for it, if you... Mm-hmm. Need any accommodations or anything, we can get you that, whatever. But she's like, you're going to come out with like giftedness upon giftedness. Mm. I was like, whatevs. And I struggled through the math portion like big time. Like I couldn't do multiplication. I couldn't do long division. I couldn't do short division. All of it gone.
Right.
What age was this when you did this learning assessment?
I was 16 because I did a mini one that showed the learning disability and a giftedness. But then I did one when I was 17 when I had a concussion. And he goes, oh yeah, you're concussed. You give up really easily. You're really easily frustrated. But he goes, no difference between the diagnoses.
Right, right.
So anyways, she thought this because all my test scores were coming back really nicely because I had a private, you know, my own room. I mean, I shared with my sister, but she did work elsewhere. So I had my own room to write my tests. I had nobody to compare marks with. Mm. I had, you know, no outside distractions. And so I looked like this little genius. I mean, I did struggle with math, but my mom was like, everyone's got to struggle with something.
Right.
So it came back with this learning disability and she's like, oh my gosh. But the whole learning disability comes with a giftedness and they kind of bottleneck each other.
Okay.
So... The giftedness was hiding the disability, but the disability it was also worsening the disability. So, anyways, so my point being that homeschooling was really awesome because I didn't struggle through school because of all those factors. I had time and a half. I had a quiet space. I didn't have to compare with others. I wasn't getting, let's say, bullied by outside sources.
Right.
What else? Heck, you could sleep in if you want. I would take my birthday off. I would just do extra work the day before. We'd go to the zoo, the science center. You'd go on all sorts of awesome trips. Like
seriously, imagine the field trips when you're homeschooled. It's whatever the hell you want to do.
Yeah.
It's not like, let's let the class vote. I am the class.
You are the class. Well, mom's the class because mom's driving.
Right.
So, and they're spending the money. But yeah, so that was pretty awesome. What else are the pros? I got to dig deep for this. I think it made me like an independent thinker in some ways, because I didn't have peers per se.
Right.
Like my friends were, we were raised Christian. So we had other Christian homeschooled friends. So, you know, I only had a few of those, but they were all different ages. Like you had some younger, some older. Mm-hmm. And then when I got to high school, I was playing rep hockey, was involved in swimming at the pool, reffing, of course. So with reffing, you have like these old dudes you're reffing with, mm-hmm. old white dudes. So friends kind of all ages. So you weren't like, oh, I have to have the latest iPhone to keep up. I have to have the Jordans. Gotcha, gotcha. I have to have, you know, the Nikes, whatever. Because I had hand-me-downs in that we went garage sailing, but I'm the eldest sibling, so I didn't have the hand-me-downs. So,
also eldest, I get it.
Yeah, I didn't care about fashion, so there was no outside peer pressure in that sense. Mm-hmm. But the cons being that because it was a very closed environment, all my friends were the same. Like I didn't have any. Yeah. I had a couple of mixed friends. I didn't have like friends of other ethnicities until like high school.
So your friends were like different age Christian homeschooled white kids.
Yeah.
Essentially. Okay.
Yeah. So when I went to college, I was like, oh, there's gay people here. There's lesbians. There's trans people. Mm. There's people from around the world. There's people who can speak different languages. I was blown away. I was like, I have teachers that are gay and lesbian. Like that's crazy.
Mm. When you say you were raised Christian, was it like strict Christian? You know, like as you're talking about now having teachers that are like gay and lesbian, like would that have been something that your family was like, did you guys ever talk about that? Did you have much exposure to like other gay people before going to university?
Honestly, now that I think about it, the only gay person I ever met was my hairdresser. And my mom, oh my God. She said sort of a queer slur, and she, I don't think she meant it like that. And she said, I don't want to look like this. And the hairdresser went, okay, sure. And later she found out that the hairdresser was a lesbian, and she apologized. She's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like, how did you not like get mad at me? Mm-hmm. And the hairdresser was like, I get it. Like, you didn't mean it that way, but I know you're Christian. I know you were raised Christian. I know you, but my parents aren't like homophobic.
Your mother sounds accepting to apologize to the,
oh, yeah.
the gay stylist after being like, I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I mean, good for the stylist for understanding, like it wasn't with malicious intent, because, you know, even like off mic when you and I were talking, I was like, oh, I know this
right?
person. Yeah. There's just some people I think like want to like jump on people mm-hmm. for making a mistake. And I'm like, can we all just like,
waiting
give,
for that
give everybody some
up.
Grace, right? Like, you know, if somebody's intentionally being malicious yeah. and being disrespectful, or if somebody just like really screwed up, and maybe this is a teaching moment. Like mm-hmm. it, maybe your mom didn't realize this was like some kind of slur. Maybe she just, you know, yeah. to her, it was a word. Like, I don't know what it was, but maybe she yeah. didn't, had no idea. So, I mean, good for the hairdresser for not
yeah, for
losing
sure.
their shit.
Because my mom goes back often and says, like, yeah, like, she really showed a lot of grace and, like,
yeah.
allowed me. And she was like, after that, she was like, she was like, wow, like, not that she didn't think gay people were nice, but she was like, wow, they're really nice. You know what I mean? Like, they go through that shit every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't explode. Like my mom, if she was, you know, if something like negative was said to her, she'd totally blow up. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, so to have like a gay or lesbian teacher was crazy, because I knew the words like bisexual and transgender and that kind of thing, but they never... I never saw that practiced in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so my parents never taught against it. My mom was like a keyboard warrior for gay people. And, you know, she said, you know, gay people and transgender people should be allowed to teach in the church. And like, that's not fair that they're not. And this whole love the sinner, hate the sin is totally bullshit. She's like, why would you condemn something somebody does that isn't, well, first of all, it's not a sin.
Isn't hurting anybody.
IMO.
Like literally nobody is hurt from any of this.
But yeah. What else were we talking about?
Sorry, I got it. Well, we got a little off track, but you were telling me about all the pros and cons of being homeschooling. And so, you know, one of the cons being that you had no exposure to diversity.
Yeah. No, yeah, none. Which, and I've talked about this with my partner because it's been a really, did you guys see Shiny Happy People?
No, I've never seen it.
Bros, you gotta see it.
Okay.
But I mean, I say that because like that was kind of my childhood turned down a few notches. But living in a vacuum bubble, the abuse that, trigger warning, the abuse that was happening within that bubble, your friends were going through the same shit too. And so you thought it was normal. Mm-hmm. So, and it was all like in the name of like God's love. Like we do this because we love you. And so being exposed to new people and new ideas and being like, oh, pointing out like, oh, that's kind of weird. Like that shouldn't have happened. Or like putting pieces together that like other people's families are different. Like they operate differently. Like one big, huge healing thing has been like being with my partner is their family is totally loving. Like they don't yell, they don't hit, they don't manipulate. Like, and the kids are perfectly fine. Mm. Like wonderful children. And I was like, oh, so you can raise good, like a good family without those like elements. That's pretty cool.
Why massage? Yeah. Why massage school? What makes you want to go to massage school?
Honestly, nothing, because I hated touching people. And my mom, and so for my grade 12, my mom was like, yo, you should do some Athabasca University courses online to serve as a transcript to get into university. She thought I was going to go to university. Mm-hmm. And so I really loved biology, but I was like, I'm practical. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do with biology. Right. I need a job to get to motivate me to finish school. And I'm not spending a bunch of money to get kicked out of school because my grades aren't good enough. I'm not special enough. And I'm not going to U of T and getting lost in the crowd and feeling like a nobody. And not that I need to feel special, but I was like, this is my first time at school. I'm going to fucking enjoy it. And I didn't want to do I didn't want to do the whole dorm thing, whatever. And my mom was like, okay, human health related, why don't you do massage school? You know, it's $20,000. You can commute there. You'll make good money afterwards. Stick with it. It's only 16 months. You can do it in 16 months. Mm-hmm. Get through it. If you hate it, hate it, but work a little bit, get more money, go to school for something you want to do. And it was like in the first term when you're like bonding with your classmates and like CCMH had awesome like anatomy games. We'd play, oh my gosh, I'm too young for this. Jeopardy.
too young for Jeopardy.
I'm not of the game show era. So we'd play like Anatomy Jeopardy, and it was just really fun. And I was like, oh, I'm really digging this. This is really fun. And practical. Mm. I was like, everything I'm learning is everything I needed to know, you know, when I was a young athlete. And honestly, they really should be teaching anatomy in like public school because we all have bodies and we all use them.
Literally been saying that for like over a decade. Like, why don't people know anything about their body?
It's
like
pretty scary.
Nothing. Nothing. I can't say that enough. Like the regular person who has not studied any anatomy knows nothing.
Your high school, say like your phys ed classes, you weren't doing anatomy?
I did, but that was
musculoskeletal anatomy.
That was an elective. Huh. You didn't have to do health and physical education after
a
certain
grade. Stopped after grade 10, I think. You didn't.
So
have
I
to
continued
do
because
old,
I was
so
like,
it's different now.
Who's not going to take gym? Like, that's dumb. Right. Of course, I'm going to. But no, you didn't have to. And when I say like, when I'm like nothing, people know nothing. Just as an example, I had a client text me because she had a weird accident yesterday and she was trying to explain to me what happened. And she's like, I bumped right on my rotator cuff. And I was like, where do you think that is? Because that means different things to different people.
Are you sure it wasn't the rotator cup though?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. It might have been your rotator cup actually. And if it was full, you're fucked. You're dead. Just give up now.
I like to keep mine empty.
But this was the best part because she says, I bumped my rotator cuff and now I'm having pain with inhalation. And I was like, well, if you actually bumped yourself on your rotator cuff muscles, this makes sense because your scapula articulates with your ribs. Like maybe you did. And she's like, it has nothing to do with my ribs. I'm like, well,
oh, man.
I don't know how to talk to you right now. So yes, people know nothing about their body.
She sent it to the hospital. She's like, you gotta go to the hospital. It's an emergency. You better go now.
Anyway.
CCMH, where did you go to CCMH?
It was the...
In Toronto or in Cambridge?
Toronto.
So this is when it's...
Don't forget that Kaylee's too young for Jeopardy.
Okay, so
won't be where
you went. This is when it was at Mount Pleasant?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
And so now you're in massage school and you're loving it.
You're loving life.
Yeah.
And you didn't expect to love it.
No.
Or did you have any expectations?
Okay, I will say the first week I cried every single day really hard.
Why?
Oh, because... So I would wake up at like maybe... 5:30.
Okay.
And then I would bike across town to the train station while it was dark because it was May. And then get on the train for an hour.
Yeah.
And then it was another 15-minute subway ride up from Union because I lived in Stouffville at the time. So Stouffville to Union, back up to Davisville.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then either walk or bus, same 15 minutes over to the school. And I'm remembering now I had a new backpack because I'd never had a backpack before. And I was like,
you'd never needed one before.
I never needed one. And I was sold on the whole like textbook. I was going to bring it to school. I was like, we're going to need these things because like homeschool, you learn out of a book.
Right.
There is no teacher to tell you anything. You read a book for school. So I was bringing 2-3 textbooks and a lunch. And like, I don't know. One time my mom bought me massive Gatorades and I was slugging all this to school, filling my locker. I used maybe $2 out of the 10 I bought. So mad.
I mean, I'm crying just listening to it. Like, this is torture.
So it was like a 2-hour commute, basically. Mm. And I had never sat for like 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
Because being homeschooled, you can lay on your bed. You can go for a walk.
Yeah,
you can sit on the couch. So I'd never sat in like a hard chair. And never mind, the massage tables are not desks. Even though they are nice to lay on. I'd never sat with more than 3 other people being my siblings at a table in a classroom. I was like, the lights are bright. People are noisy.
Right.
I'm uncomfortable. I want to walk around. And I think I'm more of a like a reading, what's that called? A reading learner.
Okay.
More than a listening learner.
Gotcha.
That's me completely. When people are, we talked about this recently when Sam was on, but when there's like a professor standing at the front of the room, all of a sudden I'll realize like, I've been watching you. I'm not sure how long. I see your mouth moving. Nothing has gone in here. Mm-hmm. But I can read my textbook one time and remember everything and I'm gold. Mm. So yeah. I get it. I don't hear anything that's happening when people are talking.
I like it when people are talking to me because that's the dude that's going to mark my exam. That's the dude that wrote the exam, maybe.
Yeah.
So that dude is going to tell me everything that's going to be on the exam. So I don't have to flip through this book. I'm like, this guy is just going to tell me everything I need to know.
I wish I could hear what he's saying.
Okay, I'm just going to sit back and listen to what he has to say.
And you know what? For our hardest courses like neuro and patho, they did give us reviews.
Right.
And they were like, these things, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
But you sitting in that massage classroom, as you said, the first time being in this room with all these like noisy people, the lights are bright, you're in this hard chair, you want to move around.
Are you like, where the fuck am I?
Was it like you finally realized, because I know that there's a lot of people who feel this way and they're not wrong, like how unnatural school is.
Torture.
Like school is so, we're telling small children who just want to like run around and play and have energy. Like you sit there. You get 15-minute breaks in between, but you sit there for 6 hours and just listen to what I'm saying and write down things. Like, it's torture.
And like with massage school, there is no like filler time. I think the first day we went around and had like a bingo sheet to like ask people questions.
Right.
And then we did this cool like palpatory, like feel what's under this like towel and describe it to us. And at the end of the day, I was like exhausted. and done with life. And then the next day, I think we dove into, we started to do like scapula anatomy. And I was like, no, it was the first day we started, we learned like medial, lateral, superior, inferior, all that. And I was like, oh my God, it's starting on day one. Like, can we not just do a warm up and like, can we not just like get to know each other? And like, I'm like, we have so much time to learn stuff. Can we just take a minute and get used to these hard chairs? Like, can my ass not just warm the chair first? And they were like, all right, go. And so I'm like studying the scapula on the train and it's like flat on a piece of paper and I'm crying like, how am I supposed to remember this? And now fast forward like 7 years later and I'm like, okay, medial lateral, I use in my daily life and I forget people don't know what they mean. But at the time you're like, this is never going to stick.
This is going to be hard.
And you learn the bones and you're like, all right, cool. I made it through anatomy. And they're like, there's muscles too. And there's ligaments and joint capsules. And it was an onslaught. The first 4 months were rough.
Any time in the first 4 months, you're like, fuck it. I'm out. I don't want to do this anymore.
I think day two I came home and I was crying and my dad was like, okay. So he gets up at like 4:30 for work to get down for six. He's a plumber. And he goes, all right, if you quit school, you're coming down with me and you're sitting in the truck the whole day. And then I'm bringing you back. And that's going to be your day for the next 16 months. I was like, gentle parenting for the win.
Guess I'm going back to the massage school.
My mom was like, there's no way you're quitting, which is hilarious because I'll spill the beans on my mom. She tried to start school like three times in a row in her adult life, quit with anxiety like the day before. Every single time she would call me into her room and be like, Keely, I am so sorry for making you go to massage school. I didn't realize how tough that anxiety was, and I get it. And I'm like, nah, you were right. I had to push through it.
I mean, it worked out. It worked out for you in the end. It did. But I mean, good of her to acknowledge that, like, it is hard, okay?
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have apologized as a parent. I don't know if I would have. I would have acknowledged, like, yeah, I realize what I did was kind of hard on you there. But I don't know if I would apologize, especially seeing success come out the other end.
Right.
Then I would have been like, no, I think I did good as a parent on that one. Maybe it was tough, but I still did the right thing. Maybe. I don't know. I guess got to wait till my kids are older to see if that actually comes to life.
Well, how old are your kids again?
My kids are 9 and 6.
Okay, yeah.
So they're tiny, tiny, tiny.
So they still got to listen to you.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Well, hopefully they'll still just continue to listen to me throughout their whole life. But that's what I'm working on. I know, I know.
This is wishful thinking,
especially because they're freaking girls, and I'm going to be out of their life way faster than I want to be. So
I keep telling him. I mean, stats are not in his favor.
They're
like,
not.
Girls usually don't open up to their fathers.
There's going
to
be a point of it's just going to be like, no, bring me the lady. I want to talk to mom about this.
Maybe.
It's fine,
though. We don't know what kind.
I've embraced that already.
Let's remember we're living in a world where there are no longer just two genders. Like, they may not identify so much with, we don't know. They may not identify with me when they're teens.
They may not be like that stereotypical girl, like, let me talk to mom. This is a women's issue, right?
I don't even think it's let me talk to mom. It's a women's issue. It's just, we're already super traditional,
right,
where there are very kind of definite gender roles that happen. Right. And
we function in a very, in, like what you'd expect. Mm-hmm. I cook, but that's just for the, you know, health and safety of everyone.
Well, yeah, because or else everyone's getting peanut butter fucking sandwiches or scrambled eggs, like for every meal. So that type of thing.
That is a dad
meal. Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's the route it's going to go. But any which way,
we'll see what happens. Yeah. Don't get too stressed out.
So the first little bit of massage school, tough. How do you feel at the end of it all? Like, did it stay tough the whole time for you?
Schoolwork wise, no. Okay. I loved it.
Yeah.
Would I do it again? No. I survived. There was a lot of like personal life shit going on, which left me with like a diagnosis of CPTSD. So I was barely, like, my depression was so bad. I think I tried to admit myself to the hospital a few times, but they were like, no, you're too young. No, you'll see things in there that'll scare you. Bullshit, first of all, especially when you're in healthcare, you're like, these are just other human beings. Like, don't try to villainize people. But honestly, I should have stopped at term one. It's like I should have, but at the same time, I don't think I would have finished school had I done that. Mm-hmm. So in an ideal world, I would have taken a break at term one, gone, fixed my mental health, joined another class at term two, come back in, whatever, finished. Mm-hmm. But I pushed through it. Then it was after I had an employer and I was like, I'm not ready to work yet. I'm not ready to work yet. She was like, no, we really need you. Like, come work. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay, fine. And so I worked in a clinic for a few months, like 2 days a week, like 4 or 5 hours a day. And I was like, I can't do this. Hmm. Like, I'm dead, like having panic attacks before work because I can't get a fucking bobby pin in my hair. Hmm. Like, it just wasn't working out. Meanwhile, that massage, my mom was the receptionist at the clinic. And she goes, so I had a panic attack before trying to put the bobby pin in my hair, gave a massage, came out. And my mom was like, that woman said that was the best massage of her entire life. And that person, I do believe, has been recommending me on Facebook ever since for like 5 years. I've never seen her again. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I can give a panic attack massage. Yeah. I can do anything.
Nice.
During the treatment, I don't necessarily, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but during the treatment, like after having that panic attack and now having to go and like play happy, I guess, like what was going through your mind? Were you just like so focused on your client that you were able to push things aside? Like how did you do that?
I have no idea. It was lost. And in the moment I was probably just like, huh, okay, I've got this, whatever, just go about my day. Because at this point panic attacks were just like a regular occurrence in my life. But now I had to, my mom had to remind me the name of the person. I don't remember what she looks like. I don't remember what we did for the treatment. And normally I'm like pretty cognizant. Like I'll remember people's essential oils that they choose, that kind of thing. And I don't remember anything except having the panic attack.
So you probably were just sort of on autopilot.
Yeah, like, totally.
Just
like
knew you had to get through the
treatment. What's the word? Dissociated. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then after that clinic job, like tell me now how you go from that.
Yeah.
That moment to like now working as a therapist. You're back in Stouffville, yeah?
I just moved to Ajax like 3 days ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So working as a therapist and now developing courses and teaching. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you get here?
Yeah. Again, my mom saw me struggling and was like, why don't you just go out on your own? Like, just be mobile. You're young. You're athletic. You have the time to build a business. Like, just go for it. And I was like, okay, sure, whatever. And I didn't really give much thought to it, but I was like, yeah, I have the time. So I made my website, I made my business cards and my logo, which were awful, but they're better now because I got real help. And slowly set up my business being mobile. And it was something that in school, I was like, I'm never going to do that. I said, actually, I had a teacher who said, when I was a student, I said I would never be mobile and I would never work with pregnant people. And she goes, that's what I did. And I said the same thing. Yeah, I'm never going to be like mobile, whatever. But I was like, never pregnant people.
So,
I can't.
So when you're doing all of this, creating the website, doing the logo, getting yourself, are you excited about this? Or are you just like, I guess this is what I should do?
I don't think I could experience excitement about anything at that point in my life. It was all just gray.
Yeah.
Gray to black. Yeah, I didn't have like any shiny hopeful dreams about like, oh, this is going to be so amazing in the future. I was just like, oh, this is something productive to fill my time.
Mm-hmm. Could you even see into the future? Did you have an idea of what type of therapist you were going to be? What type of, like, how you were going to brand yourself?
No, I didn't have an ounce of business sense except seeing what went on in the clinic for literally like 4 months. But my mom was like, you know, if I could, you know, I could figure it out and you can figure it out. And again, she was just like the office manager. And I was like, okay, all you need is an HST number and to do some taxes and away you go. Now I'm like, oh my God, what the? I was like, I assessed myself the other day. I was like, why in a state of like life, like craziness, chaos, would I choose to put all the pressure on myself, all of everything on myself? But I thought the only thought that was in my mind at that time was like, I can't work for someone else because I can't promise to show up.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, to me, it makes a lot of sense.
Exactly.
Like, I feel like when I'm
only accountable to myself.
Yes. When I feel like I'm like not my best, that I would rather just do things on my own. Yeah. Meanwhile,
what else would you have done?
Yeah.
right?
Yeah. You go get a clinic job, and then, you know, they're scheduling you all these hours, and you're like, I can't
show up
to this.
Yeah.
So having like two or three clients a week, I was like, this is more than enough, like mentally more than enough. You know, year one, having like maybe 8 appointments a month and supplementing with reffing and timekeeping and all that. But yeah, going back to your question, how did I get here? And then honestly, I found your guys' podcast, and I think I'd listened to an episode and I was like, oh, this is pretty good. And I'm not a podcast person because I don't like listening to audio, but I figured out my hands have to be busy. Mm-hmm. So I'll usually like color or something. And what I do is I'll take like a coloring book and draw in like elements of pride flags. Because also I'm an awful artist. So I was like coloring one day and listening to one of your podcasts. I think it was called Why Not Me? Mm. I can't remember who the guest was.
That was Michelle Ratz.
Yes, it was. It was Michelle. Yeah.
Good memory. Yeah, good memory. Yeah. It's almost like you do this for a living. So,
well, I'm the one that names the episode and does the write up. So I'm like, I remember typing this. Yeah, yeah. So I'm like, who was I Michelle. Talking about? It was Michelle.
When she was talking about taking her business to the floor.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And I was drawing in pride colors, and I was like, I'd had this idea for a long time of like going into schools, because I'd been a clinic supervisor during COVID at Kikawa. And I was like, I really want to teach at a college like this LGBTQ stuff, like education. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh my God, I'm such an idiot. We have Zoom.
So I'm going to pause you then, because I know we asked you, how'd you get here? But why? Like, why did you feel it was important to develop a course?
Oh man, being at Kikawa, I was like, yeah, there's a need. So Kikawa, I was told by like this RMT who trained me, who's another supervisor, she goes, yeah, there are a lot, like this is a really dense, whatever, like LGBTQ population in this area, and these are cheap treatments, so people come. And I was like, okay, that's cool.
Did you identify as non-binary at the time that you were?
At that time, yeah. Like I'd already had a name tag printed out, like Keely Sean's RMT or Keely RMT, and I got the label maker and I put they, them on it. And I'd say, hearing students use my pronouns, I'd say half used them, mm-hmm. half didn't, or but they were all cognizant. Mm-hmm. They were all cognizant. I think because I chickened out when I introduced myself. I think the supervisor introduced me as Keely and then like used she, her pronouns. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm not a good advocate for myself. Mm. But I was still like a baby queer. Like I wasn't, I think I was like newly out to my family. I'm a lot more bold now, in not necessarily correcting people, but at least introducing myself.
Right.
So I had my little name tag.
They had this huge population from the LGBTQ community, but you just felt like the students like were missing something or dropping the ball. Like
the students were fine. It was the intake forms, because I would realize I would come into the cubicle with permission and then I would address, you know, speak about the client. And then I'm like, I don't know anything about this client. I know their first and last name. They must have had like the MF checkbox for male, female on the thing, on the intake form. But I'm like, I don't know their pronouns. I don't know their gender identity. Mm-hmm. Right. Like for me, I was assigned female at birth, which means for like audience members who don't know what that means. You know, when I was born, the doctor was like, oh, congrats, it's a girl.
And you would have been called she most of your life.
Yeah, and so
right?
I was raised she, her as a girl and into a woman, yada, yada. And then I was like, meh, no, that doesn't fit. And chose my they, them pronouns. And on an intake form, sometimes it's relevant for the doctor to know if you're male or female based, like a literal doctor, like a gynecologist.
Like a physician would need to know if you're male or female.
Yeah, for like blood work potentially, or like your checkups for your genitals and stuff. And so, so I was like, people could be marking down their assigned genders at birth, but not me. I would have written down in my own box. I would have made my own box.
Create your own box, yeah.
I did. I do. Create my own box and create my own box for pronouns. But I was like, dang, I could be misgendering these clients, because you could have someone who face down looks one gender, but they identify as a different gender.
So can I ask you, for people listening then, why is this so important? Like you said twice, like you could be misgendering someone.
Yeah.
I've been seeing a lot of back and forth with people online. I've seen people online, like, you know, breaking down in tears, crying because they got misgendered by, you know, a practitioner. That I feel for them in that moment, because you've told the practitioner your pronouns. But then I see people crying because they were like misgendered passing someone on the street. But like, for example, they were female presenting, someone called them she.
Yeah.
It was likely very, like, you know, not intentional, not malicious. And so I just want to understand, as somebody who, like, I was assigned female, I identify as female, like, I want to make sure I'm like saying this question
just
properly.
Say it. Ask your question the way it's in your head.
Right. But I don't know how it's in my head. I'm getting jumbled. Like, when I look at these two scenarios,
yeah,
one of them, I'm like, well, the practitioner should have known better.
Yeah.
100%. Like, you've been told. The person on the street, it was accidental. Yeah. The impact on the person who was misgendered was the same as somebody who probably still gets misgendered. I'm assuming, again, just based on me looking at you, somebody who didn't know you.
Yeah.
Would probably call you she,
yeah.
Right? Like, what does that do to you? And how does that affect you psychologically? I mean, I know you can't speak for every person who doesn't fall into a binary, but like, does this send you into this spiral? Do you feel really like upset by it? Do you feel hurt by it? Do you feel anger towards the person who did it? Like, what does this do to you?
Yeah, I'm wondering, like, are you curious if it's... like if the person accidentally misgenders because they're just passing on the street, are you wondering if the person is in the right to cry about it?
Not in the right to cry, because you're going to feel how you feel.
I think a man is just wondering, if and when you get misgendered, what does that do for you?
Yeah, what does it do to you? Like I said, I see people like crying, which that emotion I kind of understand, because it can be hurtful.
But whether it's crying or anger or whatever the case is. So I think a man is just like, okay, if you get misgendered, how does that affect
you?
Does it affect you? And if it does, how does that affect you? Kind of like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me personally, like, if it's, I don't often get offended anymore. I think I was really touchy about it in the beginning with my family, because everyone, when you are told that a person that you've known for 26 years, being my family, is switching pronouns, everyone reacts a little bit differently. My mom was like, oh, that's so cool. Okay, I'm going to try my hardest. My dad was like, I don't get it, but okay. And my siblings were just like, okay. No comment. But my siblings will misgender and be like, oh, yeah, sorry. Or I'll correct and they'll say, oh, yeah, no, you're right, sorry. Mm-hmm. Whereas my mom will correct herself, whereas my dad will kind of roll his eyes. And I don't know why he does that, if he's embarrassed that he got it wrong or he thinks it doesn't really matter. So when it's somebody who accidentally misgenders that you know, it's like, all right, how are you responding to that? How are they responding to being corrected?
Right.
Are they rolling their eyes? Because that feels a little bit offensive.
So when your father rolls his eyes, you're like, come on, bro.
Yeah, I'm like, where is this coming from? Is it a you problem, or are you trying to put it on me? Like, I'm the annoying one for having a different pronoun.
Right. I realized what I was trying to ask is, does the intent matter in how, like, there's an impact in both scenarios?
That's what I was trying to get at.
I could not get the right words. Does the intent matter? So the person who did it, in both scenarios it was accidental, but in one scenario it was like, I've never been told, it was a complete, like, just assumption, and maybe people shouldn't make assumptions, whereas in the other scenario you've been told and, like, chose to kind of ignore it. So does that intent make a difference in how you feel, or is the impact exactly the same?
No, it's different, because when I see clients, I have my email, pronouns in my email signature. I have it in my I don't have my business card, but I have it on the website, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But people are dumb. They don't read things.
Yep.
So they look at me, or they're confused. Maybe they're older, of a different culture. They don't know what they them means.
Right. Okay.
So when I'm greeted at the door and they maybe introduce me to their, you know, dog.
Yeah.
You know, this is Keely, you know, she, this, that. And I'm like, whatevs, you don't know me. Like, I know what I look like. I know I look more like a she, her than a he, him. And if they, them's not in your vocab or you don't want to offend me or whatever, like, I don't care. Mm-hmm. It's, and so for those people that are like low stakes people,
right,
like clients, they're clients. We have to have a certain relationship with them. They're never going to be my friend. They're never going to be my best friend. There are some that I will tell because it comes up in conversation. And they are respectful and they do correct my pronouns. But most I don't. And I'm just like, that's okay. You can know me as she, her. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like, you're not trying to be offensive. You're not trying to be hurtful. It's better than having a weird, uncomfortable conversation where you're questioning everything and then you're getting distracted from your massage.
Right. You just weigh it out.
And like, then we're both feeling awkward.
Is this even worth having a conversation
for
at this
sure,
point?
For sure. Right. Yeah. But then for people who, so I bring up my dad because it's like, sometimes I'm like, you misgender so often. Are you doing it on purpose? Are you doing it by accident? I've never had somebody intentionally, to my awareness, misgender me intentionally. But if they were, yeah, I'd be super fucking mad.
Yeah. If it's on purpose.
Yeah. It's like saying a slur. It's like, no, you had a choice in your words and you chose the wrong words and you chose them to hurt me.
Mm.
So yeah, I'm going to have a reaction. But it's more the gray area where people you've told and said, hey, I use they, them pronouns. And I'll even go so far as to give examples and to give practice. And say, talk about me to other people and practice using the pronouns. And when they still don't use the pronouns, it's like, are you really putting in the work? And if you're not putting in the work, do you really love me or do you really respect me? Mm.
Yeah, like you're not even trying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a simple swap out of a word.
Yeah.
Using somebody's pronouns, like, to me, it doesn't bother. Someone tells me their pronouns, like, I will use them. Have I messed up before?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. We all will. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. My partner uses they, them pronouns. I sometimes slip up and I feel like garbage. But it's usually in context of actually thinking about another, like, masculine gendered person or entity, like an animal or something. And I'm like, oh, God, why did I just do that? I feel like crap. And like, they never misgender me. And it's just like, you know what? We all do it. Like the brain and the mouth sometimes don't match.
Yeah.
And you say the wrong word. And all it takes is like, oh, sorry, let me correct that. It doesn't have to be a huge.
As long as like somebody's acknowledging like, oops, sorry, then like that's one thing versus like just doing it. Because when I brought up the person crying because their practitioner misgendered them, apparently, like this is just from their perspective, apparently they corrected the practitioner and said, no, sorry, I use they, them pronouns when the practitioner called them she. And apparently it was like a physiotherapist or something. Apparently the physiotherapist went like, oh, yeah, yeah, whatever. Like really like brushed it off.
Yeah, that's just dismissive.
And it was cool. The dismissiveness. And that's why I was saying that practitioner, like you fucked up. Like
I
you
have
should have 100% of have apologized. So when you were talking about developing your courses, I guess I was thinking like, are you developing it to help practitioners to be a little more like sensitive to this? Like what is it that people will learn from you about working with, you know, different sexualities, gender identities, trans people? Like what is it that we're going to learn from you?
It's really like knowledge is power, right? And like I have a story about one of my doctors, the psychiatrist, read my file in front of me and was using she, her. Keely is a young woman, she, her, yada, yada. And I said, doctor, you know my pronouns are they, them, and I identify as non-binary. And he goes, yeah, well, that doesn't really matter because we're talking about your brain health. We're not talking about you, basically. I was like, what the fuck kind of answer is that? And then he had me do a depression test and I marked super low. And I was like, huh, I wonder why I'm super low in depression when you just put me down when you're supposed to be super professional. And so in his case, he was being intentional. But and in this physiotherapist's case, it sounds like she was being intentional. But when it's unintentional and just misinformed, you still have people being really upset. And it's not the intent, but it's the outcome, right? That you're really very hurt that someone didn't take the time to understand you or didn't take, like, we go to school and we learn the gross anatomy of the body and we learn the difference between the male and the female pelvis and the contents. Mm-hmm. Why are we stopping there? Why aren't we learning about the brain and about the outward projection and the outward, what's the word? But anyways, why are we stopping with anatomy? We're treating a whole person. You know, most of my work, honestly, is not about fixing the body, because I love to fix the body. But I'm talking with a person and hearing their stories, mm-hmm. and like talking about their stressors, and a lot of validation is like, I'm giving them a lot of validation and just a platform to listen and to hear their stuff. And it's like, how could I go to see a practitioner and not talk about myself,
right?
And not talk about my pronouns and not address those things? Or I have a non-binary partner. How could I not use they, them pronouns? Like, what, am I just going to betray them and use the wrong pronouns just to fit in, just not make somebody else feel uncomfortable? But when I'm teaching these courses, it's like, no, these things are all normal. You might hear somebody say, you know, a woman say my girlfriend or my wife, or a man say my boyfriend, my husband, my partner, my spouse. And I say, like, mimic that language. So if you have someone say, oh, my partner this, say, oh, your partner that.
Yep.
Don't assume it's a wife or a husband or a girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever.
Or even if you know. So I will add that in. I have a couple of clients who are like, you know, probably as young as you. And the language is just different now. I feel like the way people talk about their partners, like, people do use the word partner a lot.
Yeah.
It doesn't, when we were young, it was like, if somebody said partner, your brain immediately decided mm-hmm. that they have a same sex partner. Like, that was the way that, like, things were a really long time ago, right? And so, but a lot of my really young clients, they just refer to their partner as their partner, because I mean, it makes sense, because, like, we're grown-ups. We don't say, like, boyfriend and girlfriend. Like, that's we're adults, so we say partner. And so I've got two female clients who identify as female, who are both with male partners who identify as male, but the way they speak about them is they always refer to them as their partner. So when I'm talking to the client and I'm asking in questions, and if I never say, like, your boyfriend or your husband, I will say your partner, because that's how they talk to me.
Yeah.
So I agree with that in a lot of scenarios, like, just mimic their language because they're telling you how, you know, the way they refer to this person. And maybe I know there's people who think, like, the terms like boyfriend and girlfriend are just weird and creepy at this age. And I'm like, okay, I won't use that if that's not what you have used with me.
Yeah. Yeah. And what else? Yeah. Like, and I say, like, why is it important to know somebody? Why is it important to know somebody's sexual orientation? Well, it's not.
It's not.
It's not relevant. But if they happen to mention it to you, then you're not going, well, what is that? What does that mean? Like, you're not putting the emotional teaching moment on them. What's the emotional labor?
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody says, what's like, not an obscure sexuality, but one that's that, like, I'm, what's the word?
Well, even when people say things like pansexual or sexually fluid or gender fluid or, like, all of these terms that, like, did not exist.
Pansexual is a good one, right? Because people, like, confuse or conflate bisexuality with pansexuality.
Yes.
And there's a lot of crossover and there's some differences, whatever. But just being able to say, cool, you're pansexual. Yeah, like, I know what that is. Or just not going, well, why aren't you just bisexual?
And also, even for the therapist, just not having a feeling of discomfort. Like you said, knowledge is power. So if you, like, understand what all of these things are, even if you're not going to engage in a conversation with your client about their sexuality, because why would you? Like, like, why are we doing that? We shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But at least if they do use a term like pansexual, for as the example,
yeah,
then it's it sort of takes away any discomfort because, like, you know what they're talking about. You know what that is. And okay, cool.
Yeah, like, you're not like, oh, what is this disease? Like, I'm thinking of, like, when somebody comes in with, let's like cirrhosis of the liver. And you're like, oh, it's been a while since I covered that in school. Like, let me Google it before they come in to, like, make sure this treatment's going to go smoothly and I'm not going to recommend something that could hurt them or do whatever. Or just like a, not like a rare disease, but one I've never heard of. I'm Googling that shit.
Yeah.
And like, I'll admit to them, I Googled it because I had no idea what it was, but like, I wanted to be prepared when you came in. So this is what I know about it. What's it like for you? And I don't know. I feel like it's the same with sexuality. Like, I was prepared before anybody came in. You know, I knew a lot of the sexuality. So in case it came up in the conversation, at least I was a little bit educated and I didn't have to go, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, and there's nothing wrong with admitting you don't know what something is, because there will always be not new terms, but terms for things that have existed that are new to us.
Yeah.
That have always existed, but we now have a word for it. And it's just, it's a, I don't know, it just, it says that you care, mm-hmm. that you're educated on this topic because you care.
It, yeah, it, and it makes people feel, I'm currently in the middle of writing an editorial about exclusivity and inclusivity.
Hmm.
And I think, you know, people just understanding each mm-hmm. other makes everybody more comfortable. And if you're yeah. working in healthcare and you're working with people, as you've said, you're working with yeah. a whole person. If your clients feel like you understand them or you've taken the time to understand them, it, then it takes away any awkwardness or tension and the person can just fully relax. Like, they feel welcome. Yeah. There are therapists around the city who actually use this type of thing in their marketing. You know, they yeah. say, like, you know, it's a trans friendly practice or queer owned business, or would like to let people know, like
especially,
like, I will understand you and I accept you and you can come here and you're safe here.
Yeah.
And that's something that not all people have. So I guess your mission right now is to make maybe more therapists who can be
yeah.
a little more inclusive to an entire, and it's interesting. Somebody, one of the articles that was submitted to me for the magazine, talked about how a lot of us like to think we're fully inclusive.
Yeah.
And it's not, again, the intent is not to be not inclusive, but like, have you actually like
yeah.
learned? Have you actually done research? Have you taken courses? Do you really know what it means to be fully inclusive? And for most of us, the answer is probably no.
Yeah.
Say that again for me.
One of the articles that was submitted to me, the author,
I think my question is, if I don't take time to educate myself about anything, can I still be inclusive? Because what you're saying implies that I can't.
No, I'm not saying it implies that you can't. Okay. I'm saying that there is a possibility that a lot of us are not as inclusive as we think. So, for right. example, this building is a great example. There's an elevator. Okay. Mm-hmm. The hallways are wide enough for mobility devices and wheelchairs. Our place here is accessible for people with wheelchairs.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever notice that the front door has a giant step and there's no ramp?
Yeah.
Like, this building is not wheelchair accessible. There are spaces, like parking spaces outside, like accessible parking spaces. But the building itself, unless this person shows up with somebody to assist them, they're not getting in the building.
Yeah, there's no ramp, eh?
There's no ramp. It's right. not an accessible building.
Or they're not knowledgeable enough to park in the back where there's a ramp.
Right. This is the point. Right. There's a okay. ramp at the back. But even at the back, it's not great. There is still a little, like, they didn't do a
yeah.
great job. And so the point is, there's a lot of places that if they actually stepped back and evaluated everything, there's probably areas of all of our practices that are not fully inclusive to everyone. And it probably is because it might be impossible to be 100%. I don't know. But like, there's little things. So for example, you know, I was talking to somebody who really boasts being like body positive in their practice. And, you know, they brought up the idea that like none of their chairs have armrests,
mm-hmm.
right? Because this is obviously limiting to somebody in a larger body. And like, a lot of our chairs here have armrests. So mm-hmm. we're not 100% inclusive. We like to think of ourselves as very inclusive and we can be more intentional in that. But there's like little things that can probably be made in everybody's practice and in their life just to be yeah. a little more inclusive.
Yeah. I think, I think in an ideal world, it is possible to be fully 100% inclusive, but I think it takes a lot of money, a lot of time, and people don't want to spend that.
Yes.
Because you could have a whole new building built with
sure
accommodations for everybody. You could have a sensory room for autistic therapists. You could have wheelchair accessible everything.
Yeah. Even our even our lights in the hallways here that are on sensors, I'm sure that is somehow not good for somebody. This is what I mean. Like, I don't know enough to know, like, is that, so when we started, the magazine's a perfect example. When we started publishing the magazine, we had somebody reach out to us and thank us that we offer it in two formats because they have a visual impairment. And one of the formats that we offer it in, they're able to adjust it so they can read it.
Is it digital?
We have a digital magazine, but we offer it like on our webpage, like truly digital.
And the PDF.
But then
version.
We also have a downloadable PDF, and it's that PDF that they're able to manipulate so they can read it. And I was like, I didn't do that intentionally, but it's happy accident. Glad I did it. And it's stuff like that. Like, I wouldn't have even thought of, honestly, I probably wouldn't have been educated enough to think like, let's make sure that we do something so that somebody with a visual impairment can read this.
I think too, like if you make yourself open and available to getting feedback, and if you had like a visually challenged, impaired reader who said, hey, I really want to read your content, but I can't. Can you put it into a PDF that I can read? And you're like, yeah, let me try. Let me put my effort in. Right. But just making it apparent that people can ask for accommodations.
Yeah.
And that you're willing to try to meet that.
So for therapists who want to learn more, to make their practice more inclusive, how would they find you?
So my courses are listed on my website. So helpinghandsmobilemassage.com/courses. But I also post them like on like the RMTAO, like massage Facebook page, post them on Facebook pages all the time.
Is it that single moment of supervising clinic that made you go, I need to create these courses? It's a whole bunch of other shit that makes you want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think a natural like teacher at heart. Mm-hmm. But you know, it was also finding my voice in. There were a lot of like sexual incidents in the Kikawa clinic that I had to deal with and address and speak up against and stuff and. So I found myself like standing in the middle of a room of like 20 students speaking and like rewind back to my college days. I would ask my desk mate to ask questions for me because I didn't want to speak up. I didn't want the class to look at me, whatever. I didn't want the teacher to talk to me. And so I was like, oh, I can do this public speaking thing as long as it's not like 100 people just staring dead at me, but we can have a conversation and talk with each other. But yeah, just all of the microaggressions like in my life and the Kikawa thing where it's like, man, I wish we had just some space for pronouns on our forms so I don't misgender somebody. I was like, yeah, I could really do this and make a difference because like you were saying, a lot of people might say that they're inclusive and might say, oh, we're, you know, put the sticker on their clinic.
Mm-hmm.
But they've never, and I'm not saying you have to take a course. I'm just saying you got to do some research. But I designed a course so that people don't get the wrong research or fall into little like traps, little conservative ideology traps. And like regarding the queer community. And yeah, I put it together because I thought I joined PFLAG meetings, which stands for Parents for Lesbians and Gays. Wait, PFLAG, Parents for Lesbians and Gays. And it's this volunteer-based meeting all over. Like, there's a York region, there's a Durham region, there's Toronto, there's, like, all over the place. Just volunteer-led meetings where people can come and ask their questions and cry and talk and, like, make friends and stuff. And I was like, man, these parents are asking the same questions over and over again and worrying the same worries. Like, my child is transgender. Are they going to be okay? Did I do something wrong? How can I do things right? And it's like, damn, if I could just put all this into a course and just like tell people, mm-hmm. like, it's not a bad thing to be transgender, to be homosexual. Like, they're good things. They're natural things. They're normal things. Like, it's just the variety of nature. Like, that's it.
When you post your courses into these massage therapy Facebook groups, for example, and you get support for them,
yeah.
Can you tell by conversation with somebody when it's genuine support or when it's like moral posturing support? And does it matter to you if it is?
I only really get likes. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like the likes or the hearts or whatever. I did have one person push back. And it was obvious that this person was skeptical. And they said, what could you possibly teach me that I don't already know about the body?
Hmm.
And I was like, this isn't a techniques course.
Yeah, it's not about just the body. This is about
And I said,
people.
I said, like, level my course, like, I have three levels. Level three is about surgeries and hormones.
Yeah.
Affirming like gear and stuff. I said, I'm not teaching you techniques.
Tell us about the levels.
So level one is your introductory. What is sexuality? What is gender? What are the more commonly known sexualities? What are the more commonly known genders?
Mm-hmm.
And then the last piece of level one, which is really valuable, is how to make your practice accommodating for how do you draw in queer people?
Okay.
Because I think it was Nikki Iskander who said, like, if you're not marketing yourself, you're not helping people.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's a big thing, like, I just moved from Stovall to Ajax. I'm getting top surgery at the end of next January.
Yep.
And I need to find practitioners who are willing and educated and able to work with my body post double mastectomy. But not regular double mastectomy, like top surgery mastectomy, right? Like,
yes.
There's going to be differences, not only physically, but psychologically. And I don't want some idiot who's going to misgender me and say, oh, I'm so sorry you lost your chest. What?
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not the point of the surgery. This is a celebration, my guy. So
please don't be sorry. We're happy over here.
Yeah, like I asked for this. I advocated for this to happen. Like, this is a joyous occasion. So level one, the last part is how do we draw people in, and how do we advocate that we're educated on this? Level two is diving deeper into the sexual and the gender identities. So they're more, lesser heard of, lesser heard of,
mm-hmm.
Like omnigender, you know, pangender, neutrois, things like that.
I haven't even heard that term.
Take a course.
Right? I was like, I haven't even heard that before.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise. Okay.
Which one?
What did you just say? The last word you just said.
Neutrois.
Never heard of it.
Couldn't even say it. I don't think my tongue works that way.
Neutrois.
It's like French.
Yeah.
It means like having no gender, like physical gender. Like it's akin to agender. Agender meaning no gender.
Mm-hmm.
But neutrois means you also don't want the physical aspects of gender. So like if you were to, like a gender nullification.
Okay.
So like if you think of like...
See, and I can imagine how people would think like somebody who says like they're non-binary is similar to that. Like I'm neither, you know, because like that's the way people view being non-binary. Like I'm not male, I'm not female.
Yeah.
But they're obviously different. Like
so like non-binary is the umbrella over neutrois.
Okay.
So you have trans, and then you have non-binary, and then under those two are neutrois.
Okay.
So it's a way of describing your non-binary.
You did just teach me something today.
Yeah.
I had never heard that term before. Now I will know what it means.
Yeah. So somebody who is neutrois might try to or would like to nullify their physical gender aspects. So top surgery, genital nullification surgery, where you just kind of go smooth Barbie-like.
That's a thing?
They might shave their hair so that You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, you're
just so that they don't have.
You're just
any...
human.
Yeah,
that's it. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't even know you could get a bottom surgery where now they're
you could do nothing. Nothing. Yeah.
You could
just
be,
have
wow.
a hole to pee, and that's it.
Huh. Now you taught me two things today.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was level three. Level
that's
two.
Level that's level two. Level two. So level two just goes deeper into the more intricate. And what I love about level two is people. Cishet people, cisgender, heterosexual people will often go, huh, I wonder if I'm one of these things. And they go into their own gender and like break it down. And so I've had a student go, oh, I think I'm gray gender. Huh. And I was like, that's really cool. Welcome to the club. we brought them over to the dark side.
I don't know. You guys are pretty colorful.
We brought them over to the.
We might be the dark side.
The bad side. Yeah. So that's really cool having cishet people go, I don't know. Let me like hold on and let me think about my gender for a second. Let me think about my sexuality for a second. Because a lot of people, like myself, when I was a kid, I didn't have any room or space or like opportunity to like think about it. Or go into it.
This fascinates me, by the way. I mean, what you does? Already know that gender identity, like, fascinates. The topic of it is interesting to me because I identify so, like, strongly as a woman. Like, I feel like my entire identity is based on, like, being a woman. Like, everything. So it's interesting to me to, like, realize that there's so many people who, like, would have zero connection between this gender they were assigned at birth, and it's fascinating to me. Like, yeah. So if I'm asking really dumb questions,
no,
it's because I think this is like so interesting, and I can never wrap my head around it. Like, I'm like, I can't imagine it because I think I'm so strongly.
You can't like you can't imagine being in someone else's shoes.
I can't imagine the disconnect that would be there. Like, I feel like that would be. I know that would be like just really difficult. I think like when you're saying you didn't have time to really like think about it and you didn't have the space to really process it when you were younger. And like, I think at a certain point in somebody's life, that could be really like stressful. Like, I don't identify with this yeah. gender that I've been assigned. That would be super stressful.
Yeah. I think for me, it was more just like a slow unraveling process. Because, like, I have a brother who's 18 months younger than me. And so it was the two of us and then a break between the two younger siblings who are girl, boy. So me, quote unquote, AFAB girl, and my brother, pretty sure we shared clothes. We grew up together. So we both played Barbies. We both played trucks. Mm-hmm. And, like, nothing was weird about that to me. And so I always just identified as kid. Right? I was never
yeah,
a girly girl.
As a kid, no, I was so
But is that
far
is that normal for a kid just to be like, I'm a kid?
Yes. I was going to say, that's completely okay. normal because
yeah, I was supposed to say
as a kid, my best friend was a boy.
Right.
And so he played with my toys, I played with his, like nothing was
so that's
weird
what I was
kids.
Because like the same way you're like, I never really thought about it to even analyze, like you would have never thought about it to analyze
either. I think I'm talking more like later, like teen years when like you really do get more tied to gender. Like there's very like girl, teen girl things and like teen boy things. I think I was thinking a little later how I think that would have been stressful, but I don't know. Like that's why I'm saying it fascinates me to hear somebody else's perspective because I have no idea. I always just was like, I was like girly when I got to my teen years. As a kid, no, I was just kid.
Yeah,
I played G.I. Joes and Micro Machines. I was just kid.
Yeah. I think for me, it was more just like, confusing. I chalked it up to being homeschooled. I was like, I'm just weird, like because I
the homeschooled weirdo. I don't know.
Oh,
what
yeah.
I am.
You're like, there's too many variables going on here.
Oh yeah, So like, I played rep hockey growing up from the time I was 13 till I was like 16, and so it was girls hockey, and I was like, oh my god, these girls. They were the reason I chose not to go to high school because I was given a choice about high school, and I was like, there's no fucking way I could sit with 50 girls. In a classroom.
It's a huge group of girls.
Yeah, or whatever. I'm saying 20 girls and 10 boys, who knows. So, and I was like, and then I played on my brother's team. It was a co-ed team. Like, technically boys, but can also include girls. Oh, don't even get me on sports. Anyways, transgender people in sports. Anyways.
I want to know, but...
That's like a whole other podcast.
That is a whole other podcast. We can dive into that another time. So... So being a girl, quote unquote, I was allowed to play on my brother's team. And I played with another girl and we changed in the supply closet. So I came out of the closet every single week.
Uh-huh. That was good.
Thank you. Thank you. but I was like, oh, shit, this is where I belong. Like, oh, this boy energy. Yeah. Okay, I can dig this. But then I was acutely aware that I was a girl and I had this really long ponytail. Because back then I was still like, oh, to be a woman, one must have long flowing hair. Very Christian. And I was aware that people knew that I wasn't also a boy.
Right.
And so I was still treated like a girl, but I was like, I just want to be one of the boys. And so then I was like, wait a second, I can be. Like,
right.
I'm just one of the people now.
So did you ever, was there ever a moment that you thought maybe I'm trans, maybe I'm going to use he, him pronouns? Or did you like never really ever feel like, no, I'm definitely not a boy, but I'm not a girl, but I'm not a boy.
I thought I was like, okay. If I could be a boy, I'd want to be like a teenage boy forever, which means I basically want to look like me, but be a boy. I don't know if that makes sense. So my ideal is like, because I'm an athlete, right? So I want to be strong and athletic, mm-hmm. but I don't need facial hair. I don't need body hair.
Gotcha.
I don't want boobs, but I'm fine with the genitals I have. I'm kind of either way. I'm very neutral about that. But yeah, I would look, when I was a teenager, I would look at other teenage boys and be like, oh, you guys got it so good. Like, you guys got short hair, you don't have periods, like, you don't have to worry about a lot of the things the girls have to worry about. But I was like, now that I'm an adult, I'm like, man, if I took full testosterone, like, my weight would, like, my shape would change. Mm-hmm. And like, I mean, I wouldn't mind a deeper voice or anything, but I'd be like, I don't want to deal with all that body hair, you know, like,
fair.
I don't need chest hair. I don't need more facial hair. Like, yeesh. Which are things like you can't choose on tea, the changes you get.
Right.
Like, they're all just lucky, random genetic.
Right. It's
changes.
Whatever. Yeah. Whatever happens.
So
happens.
You could want the voice deepening and never get it. You could want the musculature and never get it.
Yeah.
So I was like, fuck that. So no, I was never like, I am a boy. I was just like, I'm just kind of not a girl.
I'm just not a girl. Do you prefer more like masculine or feminine, like clothes and accessories typically? Or like, do you go back and forth? Or is there one that's like...
I found a happy medium, especially with massage, because I'll wear... basically, my everyday clothes are also my massage clothes. So like leggings, women's leggings, because they're fun and funky and comfy. Comfy above all else. And boys' t-shirts.
That's also your age showing, by the way. That's a difference from when I was young. When I was young, we chose fashion over comfort. The young people today are way smarter than we were.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, old people. We were dumb. We wore stupid ass, like, skinny shoes with heels and tight pants. And you guys are smart.
Never, yeah.
No, you guys are so smart. It's like, I love seeing, like, Gen Z out in the wild in their baggy pants and their comfortable sweaters and their like
practical
sneakers. I'm like, look at you.
Yeah.
Look at you. You're brilliant. We were so dumb.
Yeah. So it really is a mix. It's whatever I like. I don't tend to wear very feminine tops anymore. But that could change when I get my top surgery. Maybe I'll like the shape better.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like shoes. I tend to wear men's shoes because I got big feet, size 10. So
me too. I'm wearing Mark's shoes right now.
Nice. Nice.
Like a giant feet.
I'm interested in how you were saying, like, I don't feel like female. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I just know I don't feel this.
Yeah.
Because that's always the thing that I was thinking. Like, when someone says, like, I feel like I'm a boy. I'm like, I feel like I'm male. I feel like I'm a man. I'm like, how do you know that? You don't know what a man feels like. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's like, something you that can confuses know, him a little.
It confused me a hell of a lot. I'm like, I can probably say, like, if I don't feel stereotypical men, right? But I don't think I can say that means I feel like a woman. Do you know what I mean? I have no idea what it's like to be a woman, right? Mm-hmm. I can just probably think to myself, or it's in me that I'm just not this. This is not comfortable for me. I just don't feel right. But I don't think that would, at least the way I see it, that would automatically throw me into like, well, that means I feel like this.
Well, I think maybe...
But that's where I get confused so much.
Maybe you're thinking in binary terms, like either or.
Yeah.
Right? Because if anything, like my research in course has taught me is that there's a multitude in between.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. So like if I were to throw at you some of the level two terms, like gray gender, not necessarily identifying with a specific gender, but knowing you have one but not able to put your finger on it, that kind of thing, you might actually find, oh, that describes me.
Gotcha. See, stuff like this is hard for me to get because I feel like I'm just so over here. I'm happy to hear it. I'm happy to educate myself. I'm more than willing to understand as best I can, but I don't think I can ever fully just wrap my head around
it. I think that's what I was trying to say. As somebody who's like, I'm fairly empathetic.
And I'm
like
old.
When you said, can you put yourself in somebody else's shoes? I'm like, I can, but I find it hard to, I can't imagine. I think I'd like to understand like what that feels like. For me, it's like, okay. There's a disconnect for me with, I wouldn't understand the feeling. Whoa. And that is weird for me to not understand the feeling, but it's also, I guess, not necessary. Like your course would teach me at least to understand the language and the different gender identities that exist, and making sure that I am being sensitive to people when they come in and they, you know, they say something to me or they open up to me, that I'm like, okay, like I understand what they're talking about. I don't need to understand the feeling, but it's weird for me as somebody who like considers themselves to be very empathetic, where I can like really feel what you're feeling. I'm like, I don't have the feeling.
Well, I have an exercise in, I think it's level one, about is it misgendering or gender dysphoria. So you guys are familiar with that term?
Okay. Yes.
So not feeling euphoric with your gender, so feeling off about it, uncomfortable. And so my example, which I gave to somebody once, and she said, that doesn't work for me. And I'll tell you why. Because I said, put yourself imagine yourself in a mascot costume at like a black tie formal event, and you're supposed to give a speech as like the keynote speaker, and you're supposed to be taken very seriously. And you're in a fucking mascot outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And this person goes, that doesn't work for me. I used to be a mascot and I loved it. I was like, come on, man.
I've worn that beaver costume over and over again.
Oh my God. Well, that backfired.
That was like the first person I told my analogy. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I worked so hard on this. So...
I think we've lost Mark for the day.
That's funny.
So people go, oh yeah, I feel uncomfortable. I feel like all eyes are on me. I feel really like icky in my skin. And like, that's the dysphoria, is like you're raised to be a man and you're told to be a man, but you just feel like ick. Like, you know, okay. You know, like picking up dog poop and like the bag slips and your hand touches it and you're just like, I'm contaminated. And you can't do anything until you've like showered your entire body.
Yep.
It's like, it can be like that. Like it can be very intense. It can be very mild. It can fluctuate. Some people experience gender dysphoria. Other people don't. But for people who do, and to the extreme, it's very like, I am contaminated. I must get clean. And it's just
so
like,
it's like
panic.
Extreme discomfort. Yeah. Like you, there's nothing you can do outwardly. Like you can't just like put on a hoodie and hide. It's just extreme discomfort.
Yeah. And some people do, like for literally for trans masculine people who have breasts, they will put on an XXL sweater,
right,
and hide their shape.
Yeah.
And live like that, or have this awful posture that they hold for years until they have like scoliosis because they don't want to show their biology, right? But yeah, it just is very uncomfortable. So it's like wearing tight ass spandex all day, and all you want to do is take it off and breathe.
Right.
Right. And you can't, right? Lest somebody says, oh my God, you're naked. I know who you are now. Right. Like it's very, very vulnerable and uncomfortable. Right. The choice to stay uncomfortable, or the choice to express yourself and then be shot down by society or kicked out of your home.
This is what I mean with the stress, because that's not an easy, I mean, you were, I guess, lucky. I'll put that lightly because I don't really know you or your family to really say that. But
I would say
having a family that was like, okay, I will use your pronouns. Okay. Yeah. Like this is who you are. Cool. And, but that's not a lot of people's reality either. So then to go to like doctors and physiotherapists and whomever who are like dismissive, like the example I gave, like they don't even think that this could be so important to this person because the people in their personal life dismiss them or like don't want anything to do with them. So like coming to a doctor who should be able to change a word and is like, this is not important.
Yeah.
That would be really stressful.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you coming in. And before we started recording, I said to Keely, like, anything you don't want to talk about, you don't have to, but we're going to ask a lot of questions and we can get pretty personal, but I think that this is something that will be helpful to therapists that are listening and hopefully those who, you know, want to
expand
their practice a little more will.
Everyone. Who should take your course?
Yeah, literally everybody. It's because it's a human rights thing.
Have you thought about doing this at massage schools, approaching schools and saying, this should be part of your curriculum?
Yeah, I just got to get my, my confidence up. I just got to do it, you know? It's work to find who to contact. And yeah, but I just got to do it.
We're going to help you with that if you want.
We can help you with that for sure.
I think this should be part of a curriculum.
It should be, yeah.
Well, especially like in some places are now starting to incorporate things like anti-racism into their curriculum. So I mean, if that is, you know, already on people's minds that this is something worthy of curriculum, I think that schools would be receptive to you.
Yeah.
Honestly. Well, anyway, everyone listening, you should all take the course.
Give us the contact info.
Yeah, it's helpinghandsmobilemassage.com.
This was cool. Thanks for hanging out.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Right on.
You guys are awesome.
You guys have been listening to Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. Peace.